Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. President Donald Trump highlighted the auto industry this week with a trip to Detroit. Many of the headlines were about the fact one of the auto workers heckled Trump, alleging he'd protected Jeffrey Epstein, and the president gave the worker the middle finger and told him to F off. But that was the sideshow to the main event, which was the state of the auto industry. Here's more.
Ford has really been a leader. They've done a great job. But all of them. General Motors is doing really well. Stellantis is doing really well. We're really happy about it. I just wanted to build their product in the USA.
You don't think you're going to renegotiate USMCA?
Well, I can. It's expires very shortly.
Yeah.
And we could have it or not. It wouldn't matter to me. I think they want it. I don't really care about it.
So it might go away. So you're talking about the
No real advantage to us. It's irrelevant to me. Canada would love it. Canada wants it. They need it. Because we don't need Canada product. That's the thing. You know, I want to be a nice person, but we don't need... I want to build the cars here, not in Canada. We used to build cars in Canada. Now, the Canada cars, the Canadians are moving here to build cars. Same thing with Mexico. Same thing with Japan. Japan's paid us billions and billions of dollars for the privilege of making cars here and selling cars.
What about the raw materials?
Auto manufacturing.
The quality is unbelievable. So we're at a Ford 150 plant, and I don't know that much about cars, but I know how to get people working. And all I can tell you is that people talk so much about the 150, and it has been for a long time. They make a great product, a quality product, better than anybody else can make in Europe or in any other location. Look, the Ford 150 has done well for a long time because they make a great product.
Have you ever allowed Chinese autos into the U.S.?
Well, as you know, we have a tariff on Chinese autos. And in Europe, China's taking over the auto business, I would say, is a nice statement, but that's the way it is. And here, what is it, 100%? We have 100% tariff on any car coming in from China. So that makes them able to do very nicely against China.
Mr. President, what
right?
about the...
Pretty good, right? Who would have thought that was going to happen, right?
What about the raw
Everybody
materials?
Said that the cars are dead in the United States. If you go back 4 years ago into the middle of the Biden administration, everybody was closing up their plants. Now we have more plants being built in our country than at any time in history. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. And it's the election, November 5th. And it's other things, but it's also, I think, maybe the biggest part, the election, because I'm the tariff person. And everybody now admits that I was right on tariffs. And I hope that we win the Supreme Court case.
Mr. President, what about the raw material coming in from countries like Canada? How do these companies deal with the fact that those raw materials
are more expensive? But we have a lot of our own raw materials. And, you know, the word raw and rare are a little bit of a misnomer. They're not very rare. We have a lot of places that want to sell us material, and we get it from a lot of different countries, and we have a lot of rare earth and raw materials.
Can I just have a question? Senator Tom Tillis says that the subpoena, the grand jury subpoena to the Federal Reserve Chairman was a little excessive. What do you think about that?
Well, that's why Tom's not going to be a senator any longer, I guess, right?
But what do you think?
But I like Tom Tillis. He's a nice guy. But look, he's not going to be a senator any longer because of views like that. We have a bad Fed chairman. He's bad in a lot of different ways, but he's bad because his interest rates were too high. And today we had a great inflation report, and today we had a really great growth report. So we have great growth and low inflation.
Of the big three, Ford makes most of its products right here.
80%.
80%.
That's a big advantage for Ford.
Is that the reason that you came here?
No. I came here because we're friends, three of us. Because I have helped the company a lot. I mean, as an example, trucks. I put a 25% tariff on trucks coming into the United States, and their truck business went through the roof.
You said to Iran this morning that help is on the way for protesters. What did you mean by that? What kind of help?
You're going to have to figure that one out. I'm sorry.
$53 a barrel. Is that the target for you for this term?
I'd love to see that. I mean, we're at 68. We're at 58 now. I'd like to see 53. Thank you very much.
Trump bragged about trucks, but that went to a whole new level with a new vehicle unveiled at the Detroit Auto Show. Here's more.
Yes, a brand new tank is expected to be unveiled. I'm here with Colonel Ryan Howell, CPE Ground of Warren Arsenal. So a tank at the auto show.
Yes.
First of all, tell us about the tank.
Rich history in this city that dates all the way back to World War II. You probably either have family or you have friends that have family that go all the way back to production of Sherman tanks at what was the Chrysler Defense Tank Production Factory up in Warren, Michigan. And there are plenty of other people that supply parts even to this day and design work. And you go back to the history of the Abrams itself, that was done by Chrysler Defense. So as we sit here in the context of the auto show, those people, those engineers, that culture and that history exist here today. When the nation calls, those are the engineers and the people of this city, the people in Michigan, in Ohio, in the Midwest that we've classically called upon. They are going to be the ones who deliver that capability to make sure that we are always fighting the away game. And the tank that we have now here reflects that history, the people, the modern technology that we have to bring to bear to make sure that we do the best for our sons and daughters, moms and dads that have to deploy with that capability in the face of our enemies overseas. The tank that you are seeing downstairs is the embodiment of vision that goes many years back. So all the way back to a gentleman by the name of General Starry, who wrote the original requirements document at Fort Knox. And they knew what the tank had to do. They just didn't have all the tools at the time to bring it to bear. So now, with modern commercial technologies, modern diesel technology, we now have the means to be able to put kit in the hands of a soldier, truthfully, that you use a game station controller to use. That's what's magical about this. Our 18-year-olds, the 12-year-olds that are learning how to do it today, they will adapt to that technology faster than you or I could. It's a magnificent thing.
That is magnificent. And that also plays into the cars of the future as well, right?
That's right. So when you look out on the showroom floor and you look at what's available here and you look at, I've got configurable dashboards. I've got features that are for safety to help me prevent hitting other cars or objects or steering. You can now bring that into that new tank because it's got a proper computerized digital backbone and platform that can ingest what the auto industry does today. So simple functions that are now new in safety that the current tank has, it's an amazing thing. But if you look at adaptive cruise control or you pick that, if you're in a convoy operation and you're a soldier and you've been up late and you're running 48 hours, you don't want to run into another vehicle. You don't want to hurt yourself or others. Having features like that on the tank that enable safety first, so that a way you can continue to move with the formation safely. The tank now becomes, because we're going to go down to a crew of three, but the tank becomes the fourth, the fifth, the sixth crew member because of all the compute and safety features that the cars that are right out here through those doors that you see on the auto, on the showroom floor. And the beauty is the engineers that are out here today, the soldiers that we'll have tomorrow, they can look at what they have in their hands today that Chrysler, GM, and Ford are putting out there, or Tesla, or pick your favorite automaker. And that technology can now be envisioned and adapted to the platform that's downstairs. That's the magic of what that tank brings.
So it's AI, it's robotics, it's mobility, all coming together.
That's all of it. That's right. Your tax dollars at work, right?
Yes.
So ultimately, more so than a PowerPoint and a news headline or whatever, it's real. And so there's nothing more important to me than being able to do the unveiling in this city where Abrams was birthed by Chrysler Defense those many years ago and to see the modern rendition that it now offers to the Army.
Very cool.
On the opposite end of the auto spectrum from a tank are electric vehicles. As Ford and other automakers pull back in electric vehicle manufacturing due to what CarScoop termed as politics, policy, and what Ford sees as market reality, California is hoping to make up the gap and get more EVs on the road. During Trump's visit to Detroit, Ford's CEO unveiled the company's plan for a new line of budget-friendly combustion engine trucks. Still, California is hoping to regain EV momentum. The Golden State's Governor Gavin Newsom released a budget plan that includes $200 million for a new incentive program for electric vehicle buyers to help replace the $7,500 federal tax credit that the Trump administration eliminated last year. Here's more from Phil Mateer.
EV rebate program was a success the first time around. Did it spur sales?
Yes, it did. It helped out in California. You know, there was a $7,500 rebate. We also had federal tax credits as well going in there. So yeah, it helped spur sales. The problem is in the last couple of years, the market is kind of flattened as sort of the people have bought them, and there's not a big encouragement for people to buy them now. It seems to have sort of plateaued for a while. Also, the feds have pulled back on their rebates. The Trump administration's not a big EV fan. And so they they have pulled back on it, and so it's making it more expensive for people to buy electric vehicles. Now, Newsom is trying to get that, jumpstart that trend of buying EVs again, and he's setting aside $200 million in the current budget to sort of restart California's fund to rebate for lower and moderate income people to buy EVs so that everybody can get them, not just people going up and down the Silicon Highway.
What's in this for the governor?
Well, let's take a look at that. That's an interesting question. He's been a big advocate for this, both as tech and California being an EV market where we make them in Fremont, but also because of the politics of it, saying no to the Trump administration, we're going to make up for whatever they do. And he's been trying to do this repeatedly. Now, what's in it for him is this is a one-time set aside. And that one time will nicely run until he's out of office and running for president. So basically, he's in some ways, he's doing that old adage. If you've got a problem, you can either fix it with a long-term solution or fix it temporarily and hand it off to the next guy and gal who takes your place. But you get to keep rolling.
Well, let's say Gavin Newsom is running for president. He can then campaign on, I'm the guy who brought EV credits back to California.
Absolutely. And he can. And whether or not, you know, how long it lasts and such like that remains to be seen. But yes, he can and he will. And this comes at a time when California has gone from, you know, mega surpluses to a deficits. We either have an $18 billion or an $8 billion deficit pending. But nonetheless, he's decided to make this a priority. Now, I've got to ask, though, however, if it's really going to stimulate sales of EVs. People that buy EVs tend to be at the higher income level, so it's been tough to get them to down into moderate and lower incomes, because a lot of times an EV is somebody's second car, especially if it's a family. You have one car that's a hybrid or a gas guzzler, and the other one is the electric. The other thing is, at the same time, is that remember the sticker program that allowed EVs to go on the diamond lanes and zip down the highways has ended. Now, my question is, what's a bigger incentive, a couple of bucks in the bank or being able to zip around in the HOV lanes? That might be a real way to get people to back to buying them, but I'm not sure that has the political punch, as you note, of being able to say, I'm the guy that brought them back, the rebates back. That's got a better bang for the dollar and a better mile per gallon politically.
Whether or not people buy cars depends on jobs. So here's more on the recent jobs report and how it's affecting businesses.
The job market's woes have extended to small businesses, where job openings are at their lowest since 2020. One in five small businesses in America do not plan to hire recent college grads this year. We're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by David Prisco, director of the Center for Career Readiness at Drexel University's Lebow College of Business. David, it's good to talk with you. Have small businesses historically hired more recent grads? Is that where the grads go?
Hi, Steve. Yeah, historically, small businesses have been a major entry point for recent grads. They account for approximately half of private sector employment, and traditionally that has been where most traditional undergrads and graduate students go for their first professional experience. But what's interesting that we're finding here in this survey is that about 30% of small employers are more likely than larger firms to say they're not going to hire recent grads this year. So we're seeing a pretty big shift in what the hiring market is.
All right, read the tea leaves here. What does this shift say more broadly about the economic conditions that new grads are facing?
Well, I think it's not only what recent grads are facing, but also what small businesses are facing. We're seeing firms indicate to us that they often lack the time and dedicated managers, as well as formal onboarding resources that make it easier to bring on new talent. So training recent grads, that requires a really big investment. Many of these businesses are juggling tight margins, rising costs, economic uncertainty. So we're seeing a little bit of caution come in. And I think as a higher ed institution, we have to be aware of that. And we're trying to make more inroads with recent grads. And one thing we're doing here at Lebow is supporting small businesses where we can by trying to assist them in some of those onboarding processes to see if we can, you know, really assist those recent grads and making a foothold in there.
All right. So to put a bow on this, what's your message to young people who are trying to find stable employment this year?
I really think that if you're looking for employment, you have to go past just looking at a job board. There's great job boards on LinkedIn, Indeed, Handshake, etc. But everyone is looking at those same job boards to apply. So tap into your professional network. Reach out to your connections that you have so that you can really find the hidden job market. See if you can get your resume in front of a hiring manager before it even makes that job board. That's going to, utilizing your professional network is just going to make your process a little bit easier so you can focus on showcasing the skills that you've gained as opposed to sending out mass applications.
All right, great advice, David. Thank you. David Prisco, Director of the Center for Career Readiness at Drexel University's LeBeau College of Business.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.